Good Show, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus. Very happy to be joined now by Howard Beck, senior NBA writer. Bleacher Report has a great panel discussion on LeBron James, which we will get to in just a second, Howard. I appreciate you taking the time for us. So what do you make of this Raptors hire of Nick Nurse, the assistant under Dwayne Casey? Does it feel like this was part of the plan, or did they just run out of candidates?
I think the plan was probably to hire Mike Budenholzer, who took the Milwaukee Bucks job instead. But, that is one reading of it. I don't know if that is exactly how it unfolded, but that's certainly kind of how it felt, how it seemed. I think that they obviously felt they had a lot of good candidates, including internal candidates, Nurse being one of them and the one that they chose. But I don't look at this as some sort of, failure of process because it took long or because they ended up hiring from within after looking outside. You make a major change after having one of the longest tenured coaches, and that's a relative term in this league, but one of the longer tenured coaches in the league, and the best era you've ever had in terms of pure wins and losses. You're making a pretty big change, so you should take your time. It's always nice to think that you've got somebody already lined up. It doesn't always work that way in this league. And, they had a number of people who were good candidates for different reasons. And in terms of Nurse himself, I don't know Nick Nurse. We've never chatted. So I'm not an authority. I just know that he's very well regarded around the league, as you guys are aware. You know what the role he played is in re-energizing their offense this season. So he's a known quantity to them. He's obviously got a bright mind. And, the qualifier has to be every time somebody hires a hot young assistant or just a well-regarded, highly touted assistant, we never know how anyone's going to do once they're in that other seat. It's different. And, it requires more than just tactical acumen. It's about how you relate to your players, how you get them to buy in. It's about your personality. It's about managing not just your players, but managing your staff, managing upward the front office. It's a completely different job. And so, I would just always say, we don't know. We don't know how any of these guys are going to work out when they make that move.
And I think that's what's going to be the most interesting fallout here is whether the relationships he has with the players on this team right now are more of an indication that they're going to be making some significant roster changes and that they want him to be steering the ship, or whether they believe that he's so strong with these players and with this core that moving forward he's going to be the best option and still be able to get the best out of some of these guys. It's going to be fun. I anticipate it's going to be an interesting offseason for the Raptors. And listen, they didn't have any pressure, right? Because they don't have a draft pick, so it wasn't like they needed to make this decision with a rush, and they got to find out maybe how some people from some other organizations view this Raptors team. So, the time thing makes a little bit more sense to me. So let's dive into your piece that you just posted on Bleacher Report, which again is excellent. We actually thought about reading excerpts of the piece out loud because
it's just
so good the way that you saved Kobe for last every single time and how the answers built up. So again, it's on bleacherreport.com. We suggest people go read it. It's Kobe Bryant, NBA greats get lathered about LeBron's legacy. So yeah, we've spent a lot of time doing legacy talk, legacy. It's what we talk about now with the Warriors and how we view them as a dynasty, and Kevin Durant, and how we view his back-to-back MVPs with this team, and of course LeBron James. And I guess my first question to you was, are your eyes still, did they roll to the back of your head? How difficult was it for you to absorb the Kobe answers that time?
Well, I've known him for 21 years, so not at all. I covered him starting in 97 through the end of the Shaq Kobe era in LA, and so I've known him a long time. I have a good feel for how Kobe thinks and in his views on the game. So, as I'm asking him some of those questions, I kind of know where it's going to go, but I'm always wondering if at this stage of his career, be removed from the game for a couple of years, if he's going to have a little bit different view of it. And, I wasn't certain that when I asked, hey, but what about 8 straight finals? Doesn't that count for something for LeBron? I thought maybe he would go a different direction. I thought it was possible. But when he snapped back with the, you've known me long enough to know the answer to that, I also wasn't surprised, and I laughed and I said, yeah, I get it. I have known you long enough to know. I should have anticipated that. But, you don't want to assume too much. You don't want to assume that that's going to be the response. And I thought maybe he would have a broader view of it at this stage. And his view certainly stood in contrast to all the other guys, whether it was Grant Hill or Isaiah Thomas or Vince Carter, Chauncey Billups, Paul Pierce, the rest of these guys I talked to, who, look, they don't have Kobe's accomplishments, But several of those guys I just named have NBA championships, and a few of them were MVPs of the finals as well. Like, I think that their opinions are as qualified as Kobe's are. And their view is, look, what LeBron has done is incredible. It does stand out on its own. It's not the same thing as a pure ring count, but there's more to a legacy than just how many rings you collected. And there's more context to a finals record than just, 3-6. Like, you have to look at who you were up against, who you had with you. So Kobe took a harder line, and that's Kobe. That's fine. Like, that makes for a more interesting discussion.
Oh, 100%. I love it. I love the contrary opinions, people that aren't just going to, you know, go along with the popular narrative, and Kobe's never going to do that. And obviously there's an element of narcissism to it as well. That's what I'm trying to figure out, right? Is this just Kobe trying to be a contrarian, or Kobe thinks he's the second best basketball player of all time? Probably, right?
Well, I think he's the best.
Your interpretation of that is a common one. I mean, I've been on Twitter for the last 24 hours seeing the flaming hot takes in response to the story. And look, a lot of people feel that this is Kobe trying to, make sure that his place in the pecking order in history is above LeBron's. I'm not discounting you or anyone else saying that. I'm not positive of that. I think a lot of this just has to do with the fact that Kobe has a certain mindset about championships, about rings philosophy, rings with a bunch of Z's at the end, that it's not uncommon. This is not unique to Kobe. This is a lot of fans too. This is everybody who still capes for Jordan over LeBron. And I'm not saying they're wrong either, by the way. I'm kind of neutral in this discussion, but there are plenty of people who say, look, it's just about the rings, and that's why Jordan's better than LeBron. And if you're going to go with that, then it's fair to say, okay, well, Kobe's got five. So what Kobe's expressing there, I understand where people think it's a selfish impulse to just make sure that his own legacy doesn't get, overshadowed. But I think it's also just him expressing what he's always based his career on, what he based his goals on, which was, hey, Magic won a bunch, and Larry won a bunch, and Michael won a bunch, and I want to be the next Michael.
Yeah. See, I'm okay with the way that he views the rings. It's the stuff that I find over the top and petty when he starts discussing LeBron's teammates and the whole, you've just got to get it done. And looking at like the way he treated his teammates and the ways that he would blast them publicly. And then to look at LeBron James and not be able to at least acknowledge that he's not working with the best of supporting cast. That said, I am interested because you said you're neutral, but I do wonder how you evaluate this stretch of finals appearances for LeBron and how they weigh into the greatest of all time debate. Because so in the piece, it's like, yes, we have to acknowledge that he was an underdog in the vast majority of his finals appearances. But then we also have to acknowledge that the competition he faced in getting to those finals wasn't always elite, and that he hasn't faced that many great teams. And even some of them that we thought were going to be better, like that 60-win Atlanta Hawks team or the Raptors team this year, like that they turned out to be a bit of paper tigers when they reached the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, this is why these discussions are so fraught. This is why I'm generally neutral on them, because it's impossible. You got to go layer by layer. You're comparing across eras. You're comparing players who are vastly different. The game is different. The competition, look, has LeBron ruled the East during a week period for the East? Yeah, pretty much. Should that matter? I don't know if it does, if we're going to take that into consideration, we should also take into consideration that Michael had the benefit of Scottie Pippen for all six of his titles, and LeBron had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love for these last few runs. Okay, they're good. They're not Scottie Pippen good. They're not anywhere near Scottie Pippen good. Michael had Dennis Rodman. He doesn't have anywhere, LeBron doesn't have anybody near Dennis Rodman. Now, Wade and Bosch, very, very good. Wade, Hall of Famer. Bosch, I think people feel like he's on the bubble, might get in. Not Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman. So if we're going to consider opponents, we also got to consider teammates. So that's why, and by the way, this is not me trying to now make the case for LeBron. I don't care. I don't think there's an objective truth here. I think it's fine that people have their camp and they have their guy and they want to argue it to the death, and it's fun. And I can take either side of the debate and probably argue it fairly coherently. I just don't think there's an objective truth, and I don't think there's any point to it. I think the person I've most related to in this discussion as I went through all these guys over the last couple of weeks was Grant Hill, who was basically saying to me over and over, like, I think it's stupid. I think it's foolish for us to try to determine this. Just, enjoy what LeBron James is. He's incredible. And, you know, Michael was incredible, and that's fine. Like, I'm closer to the Grant Hill school of thought on this than anybody's.
I think we are, too.
Well, yeah, because it is, and it's subjective, and because there's no way of actually saying 100% this is the real truth that I think most people have made up their minds by now. Like, there's nothing...
That's actually the only part of it that does upset me, to be honest with you, is when people do take the hard line in the sand and say, like, it's no question, it's clear that LeBron is better than Michael Jordan,
right.
Or when it's Michael Jordan clear. Like, I don't mind having the discussion. I think it is fun to discuss their accomplishments and compare and contrast the two, because, like, that's what we do in professional sports, right? We have these debates.
Sure.
But, yeah, the hard line guys are usually what – that's the only thing where I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I don't know how – with something subjective that you could just say with pure, like, yet you're definitive in your position on this.
Well, it's fun.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, there's a couple, like, little wrinkles you can throw in too, right? Like, people have this, like, their own little sliding scales in their head. So I'm talking to Paul Pierce about this, and Paul's like, no, it's Jordan. I said, well, what if LeBron, can't be 6-0. He's already got those 6 losses. What if he somehow wins 3 more and he's 6-6? Now he's been to 12 finals and has 6 championships. And Paul's like, well, yeah, I mean, if he does that, then maybe he's ahead of Michael. Yeah. And then it was, and then he said, if I interviewed Pierce at the time that it was, I think it was just 1-0. I don't think it was 2-0. No, it was 1-0 at the time in this current finals when I got him. It was before game 2 started. And Pierce had his own twist on this too, where he said, if he wins this series, because they were already down 1-0, they had that devastating game 1 loss. LeBron, of course, has no help around him, and the Warriors are one of the greatest teams ever assembled. Pierce said, if he wins this series, I'll put him ahead of Jordan.
Well,
I didn't use that quote because obviously by the time I printed this, the series is over. But
yeah, that's how we'll know that Kobe's not being genuine, is if, yeah, LeBron wins a bunch more championships. He's like, no, but I mean, he went and joined James Harden, and those don't really count. Yeah, we'll know that that's not really Kobe being totally forthright. With us. It's a bunch of other NBA stuff we want to get to, but it all revolves around LeBron for sure, as we're like daily taking in information, and now we're hearing stories about his kid being enrolled in a California school and whether that means he's going to the Lakers. Are you sick of this yet, Howard?
It's too soon to get sick of it, but I will be eventually. You know, when we get 5 more reports of LeBron kids and schools or real estate purchases or his yacht was spotted somewhere. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of nonsense for the next few weeks. So I'm going to tune out as much of it as I can.
Yeah. Again, it's kind of like having the hard line on who's better, Michael or LeBron. Is I know LeBron is going here. It's like, no, you don't say, you know, please. Like that's all we don't need is you can speculate. That's fine. I think that's fun too. What I find interesting too when reading this article, and we're talking about legacies and how we're perceiving LeBron James, is that one of the things that I feel like has gone maybe even a little bit under the radar is the discussion around Kevin Durant and maybe even Steph Curry when it comes to legacy. Because yeah, we've got Kobe Bryant talking about winning is everything, and that we have cultivated this ring culture, and I think that it's part of the reason that we saw the formation of the Warriors and part of the reason that we saw Kevin Durant go to Golden State. And yet it seems like, and we're guilty of this too. Like I don't think either Ben or I are fans of the decision that Kevin Durant made, not for the reasons that he owned OKC any loyalty, just that, yeah, it was, you joined a 73 win team and a one that beat you in it. Just the optics of it were, yeah, it's just not great. It doesn't make for the same level of competition. But I do wonder as to like how many of these rings or how many of these MVPs that these guys are going to have to accumulate for them to start going higher and higher into the discussion or for them to actually start getting credit for this, because it just feels like we dismiss their accomplishments very quickly because of the team they play on.
I mean, I don't dismiss it. I mean, I do think we all felt like this was a very anticlimactic finals, and, you know, the 3 and 4 years is not being celebrated, I think, the same way that maybe we've celebrated some other teams. I think there's a little bit of a lack of enthusiasm aside from, you know, within the Bay Area, obviously, because they just feel so stacked that it just feels, you know, like we're all just shrugging at this point. Now, whether that takes away from the accomplishment, I mean, no. Listen, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people are still going to be talking about this legendary team that had this incredible wealth of talent that, reeled off whatever it's going to be, 5 championships in 6 years or something. I mean, it could get very gaudy. But Look, it's tough. Durant made a decision that we've never seen made before in the NBA, not at that level, and not for somebody in their prime, you know. And it's always going to color people's opinions of him and maybe of that team to an extent too, rightly or wrongly. It's interesting. It's a different kind of consideration. I don't know if it's a fair one, you know, because we don't care when, you know, incredible players are drafted to the same team. So why is it any different if a player chooses it? It's really kind of a strange logical contradiction that, the Lakers managed to acquire Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal in the same summer. They're both MVPs, you know, or would grow into those. You know, it's just that neither of them chose the other. They just got slapped together and they weren't exactly all that happy about it most of the time.
Yeah.
But we don't detract from. Now, that said, as we go through these ridiculous debates that spiral out of control, I've got people in my mentions who are arguing about Kobe and LeBron who then start to use Shaq against him. Oh, Kobe was just the second fiddle on those teams. It was really Shaq's team. And this is where it goes. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you're LeBron and you never left Cleveland in the first place in 2010 and you just stayed there and they never got you help, well then, you know, your career is degraded by the fact that you never won championships. And it's all your fault, even though you didn't have great teammates. You go and you find the great teammates yourself because your franchise couldn't do it. Well, now you're damned for going and picking them yourself. So, listen, there have been super teams before, maybe not at this level, but the Warriors are not unique in that regard. Bird had Hall of Fame teammates. Magic had Hall of Fame teammates. Jordan did. That's the way the NBA goes.
I think that the next panel discussion you should have should be about Kevin Durant. I'd be interested to find out what Kobe thinks. What if KD wins four more and he's got six and one finals?
That would be interesting. Is Kobe all of a sudden flipping it and being like, you have to look at the teammates?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to. Yeah, that's where you could catch him.
Not to add more work to your plate, Howard.
I wonder, before we let you go, and this is a little off topic from the article that you have, but I've been really fascinated by what happens with a couple of these teams that are going to still be challenging the Warriors, right? Because that's, to me, that's what the NBA is going to be now, is that who can actually have a shot at knocking this team off the top of the mountain. And Houston, to me, it feels like maybe they missed their window, but I just don't see LeBron James going there. It's hard for me to imagine that he ends up being like pulling the bandwagon move, or that he looks like a ring chaser at this point, maybe. But it would still take a lot of tricky cap moves, which I guess I can't rule out for Daryl Morey. But it's the other teams, right? It's the Sixers and the Celtics, and what are they going to be able to do, and how are they going to take a step forward? But the Sixers, with their ability to sign a max free agent, if they strike out on LeBron and Paul George, what would you think the backup plan might be?
Well, it's those two. You hope to trade for Kawhi Leonard. Maybe you'd hope to do that and sign one of those guys. Like, that would be incredible. Those are the dream scenarios. Of course, I don't know who's dreaming up those scenarios since they don't have a general manager at the moment. They've got a number of options, but I mean, listen, if all they did was, you know, they strike out on the big names, they bring back the same crew, they re-sign JJ Redick to a slightly smaller contract because, you know, they give him the 1-year balloon payment of 23. I don't think he expects to get that again. I don't think they expect to pay that again. But if they don't get any major free agents, you sign him to half that, you use the other half to sign a couple of other decent players to fill out the rotation, get a little more veteran experience in there. And then on top of that, look, Embiid, you know, he got through a whole year healthy for the most part. You're going to have more growth from him. Ben Simmons will grow. Markelle Fultz, now everybody's forgotten about. Listen, his career is not a fait accompli. He had a really, really, really weird rookie season, but he was number one for a reason. And if they just get the Markelle Fultz they thought they were drafting, now you got three young stars plus whatever vets you sign with that cap room. They're going to be fine. Like, I don't think the Sixers, they have two guys who already should be all NBA for the next 10 years, potentially. So I don't think there's a desperation there for them to land one of the big names. If they do, I mean, they're just that much more ahead of the game. And obviously the difficulty here is whatever you've got, you're now trying to deal with a Boston team that should just be absolutely stacked when next season starts.
Yeah, they should be. If it's as simple as just adding some great players to a team that already went to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. Howard, really enjoyed the piece and really appreciate you coming on for a few minutes here.
Thanks again, Howard.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.